Bills Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, did you enjoy your stress-free no bill Sunday?
I did. I very much did. This was a very low-key Sunday in my household. Didn't have the guys over. A lot of people were just busy doing stuff. The usual football Sunday kind of took its week off this week, so it was kind of just me enjoying my setup and enjoying a stress-free football by my lonesome, getting some stuff around the house done in the meantime. You know, well, productive Sunday overall. A much more productive than normal Sunday, I would say, Josh. But yeah, it was a good, relaxing Sunday overall.
It was an interesting one, too, because I even tweeted this out from the Bills chat account. Not only were the Bills not playing, but they play the Jets tomorrow, so they weren't playing. The Dolphins are on a bye. The Chiefs are on a bye. So, like, the usual suspects of teams that you really want to lock in and root against just weren't out there. For some, rooting against the Texans has kind of become a thing. I get it. The Diggs thing. Maybe you want to root against New England. I find that to be kind of irrelevant at this point. You know, rooting against Baltimore, I guess, could make some sense for sure. Otherwise, though, there wasn't a whole lot to really sink your teeth into. From a Bills standpoint, I think it was more personal reasons, albeit, you know, fantasy or betting or just teams you like and dislike. But because the Bills play on Monday night, Luca, we are in the familiar seat of not breaking down a Bills game and a post-game show. We are going to break it down as far as a preview show, as the Bills and Jets do battle in, I think, as big of a game as Week 6 can potentially be. Not only because the winner of this game will be in first place in the AFC East, for whatever that's worth, in Week 6, but both of these teams are kind of up against a wall, as hard as you can be in Week 6. For the Bills, they're on a two-game losing streak. They kind of take one step forward and two steps back as far as injuries go. They get one player back, and now James Cook is questionable. Shakir's questionable again. Ed Oliver's been ruled out. You know, we just have been waiting for these Bills to get healthy. You finally get Terrell Bernard back. Maybe you get Taron Johnson back this week. And, oh, now James Cook's potentially hurt. But his agency did say he's going to play. It's like you just want this Bills team to be fully formed. Then the other side of the coin, the Jets fired their coach this week, Robert Saleh. They demoted their offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett, former Bills offensive coordinator, and Todd Downing is going to call plays. And they're also dealing with the after effects of coming back from a London game and not taking the bye week. And this is a Jets team that had basically pushed all their chips in for this year. And now they're sitting here at 2-3 with a chance to go to 2-4. And I don't know, Luca, right off the bat, it feels like storyline wise, you don't have to be a Bills or a Jets fan to get into this one.
No, this is a real simple one for even the general football fan or national media member to be able to paint the picture of and give kind of a full or either give or obtain kind of a full picture of what's at stake, what the situation is, what interest level is going to be there, and kind of what to pay attention to as we get into pregame, into the game, and throughout, you know, the actual moments of the game, what is all taking place. You know that the camera is going to be cutting to, I think it's Ulrich. I hope I'm saying that right, but cutting to him as they talk about the Saleh firing. They're going to be probably even mentioning the Nathaniel Hackett demotion. All of these kinds of things are going to happen from a Jets standpoint, but then you're going to get all of the conversation about it, basically the last 2 weeks for the Bills and kind of how things have been off the rails and just not operating smoothly. And for having someone like Josh Allen, where, you know, Josh Allen's of course a big face of the NFL, they want to understand or wanted him to do well, and they're going to highlight what's been going on. And hopefully for the NFL sake and the general football fan, we get to enjoy a much better Josh Allen than what we saw this past week. So Monday night kind of writes itself on the interest and intrigue for anyone involved. It just elevates it if you're also a fan of one of these sides, just because you understand what's at stake. And I think you bringing up or highlighting kind of having control of the division for whatever it's worth in week six, I think there is some value in it right now, because we talked about it just before we went, you know, to start recording, where if you're the Jets and you lose this game, you lose hold of the division, of course, but then on top of it, your season starts to become in jeopardy. And next week's Sunday night game against the Steelers in Pittsburgh becomes kind of, as you called it, a nail in the coffin kind of game. If you walk out of there with a loss, all of a sudden now you're 2-5 and you have to run the table to just get to 11 wins, which is realistically even what you need to try to do to win the division, especially if you have the Bills also involved. So the Jets have a lot going on themselves. For the Bills, I do believe there is a massive difference between 4-2, breathing room in the division, and kind of being able to then go into what you can consider your easier stretch of the season to continue to build on that and progressively work your way away from the Jets and the Dolphins for whenever Tua comes back, potentially all of these things. You know, you can kind of build on this and kind of create or maintain the separation from yourself and the pack, while also trying to keep up with the rest of the AFC as a whole. If you lose this game, you kind of lose all control of that. You're on a 3-game skid, which is a very rare thing at one Bills drive these last few years. You just kind of, it's a big tipping point, I guess, mm-hmm. is the way to put it for both teams. There is a lot that can go right or wrong based on the result of this. And the fact of where they are within the division only kind of highlights it and emphasizes it even more so. So I think when it comes to week six divisional standings and impact games, this, in my opinion, goes up a little bit more. It elevates itself just because what then is also on the shoulders of being in the position that you would be depending on the win or loss within the division and where that sets you moving forward.
What's your panic level going to be if the Bills do lose this game?
I don't think that's a super simple question to answer. I would
context
say
of how they lose kind of deal.
Context matters, yes, but also panic level of for what? Winning the division, making the playoffs, kind of the season success as a whole.
Let's say they lose the game and the offense looks just like it's looked the last couple weeks, where Josh Allen can't break 200 yards passing. Maybe he gets one touchdown, but they're largely non-competitive offensively.
Concern level would definitely be at, I would say it's definitely over a 5. I don't know if it's quite a 7, so we'll say 6+. I would call it like a heavy 6, where then everything we talked about post game of the Texans game, I think really would just start to blow up even more so, because you're getting worried about the psychology of Josh Allen right now. If that were to happen, you are very worried about what the heck's going on in between the ears. And you know, other than that as well, you're concerned that there's no answer on how to correct these things with your receiving weapons and whatnot, because it's not like right now you have 2-3 injuries that are making you reshuffle the deck in the way that it is. It's like, no, there's Khalil Shakir, who sounds like he's trending towards playing Monday, but we don't know entirely. And on top of it, it's like, that's the only guy that's really out. Yeah. Everything else is available. So how do you get this fixed and corrected? It does feel like, you know, there's not a true answer to that. So if it just continues the way it's been, I would say the concern level is a 6. Now, what I will then kind of put an asterisk or even bounce off of that is, I would still believe that this team, going through the stretch that they have coming up after this game, can still put together wins even with what they have. And the performances, I would like to believe, will eventually get better. That yes, they struggle against the Jets, but then all of a sudden you're turning around and you're playing the Titans. You're playing the Seahawks, who are just absolutely spiraling out of control right now. You're playing teams that are softer on the schedule now, finally, and you got out of your 6-game kind of tough start, where maybe that's the moment, Josh, where they can finally just try to build on things or try to build up something from nothing, and from there start to go on a run where then once they get back into the tougher stretch, when they have the Kansas Cities, the San Franciscos, the Detroits, all that, they can go into that with a little bit more momentum. Not saying that they didn't go into this other stretch with momentum after that Jacksonville game, but still, you can build up that confidence again, get through whatever the heck's going on right now if they were to fail once again Monday night, and then maybe be a little bit better as you get into those, you know, those meaningful games in November, December, moving into the playoffs, where my concern level, again, to kind of go back to your original question, my concern level for the overall picture of everything would be a 6+. My concern level for making the playoffs, that would still be on the lower side. That would still be under a 5. I mean, I'll call it a 3, because I mean, 3-3 is not a great spot, but still plenty of opportunities. And at the end of the day, even a less than average Josh Allen, but still healthy, should be enough to make you a top 7 team in the AFC. So overall, I wouldn't be overly too concerned.
And on the flip side, if they win this game on Monday night, and you're listening to this on Monday, we're recording on Sunday night, the Bills, who have been on a 2-game skid, I think really steady the ship, because when you look at their 2024 season resume, it will include 2 AFC East road victories over the 2 teams that I think we all agree coming into this season were the ones standing in the Bills' way. They already have the win over the Dolphins in their pocket. That was against Tua. And if they go on Monday night and beat the Jets in New York, New Jersey, then, I mean, that not only gives them a 2.5 game lead in the division, holding back a sneeze here, but it also just, it boosts their odds, just the fact they did it in those 2 teams' buildings. And then you mentioned the softer part of the schedule coming up. I still think, win or lose, Luca, this Bills team is going to have to add something to the wide receiver room for me to believe that this can be more than just a playoff team. And you and I were even talking off air. Get into the playoffs. You have Josh Allen. Let's see what happens. And to the Bills' credit, we haven't even seen remotely close to their fully formed defense on the field together. Taron Johnson could be active for the game tonight. I kind of predict he will be. Matt Milano is not going to be back till November, December. Mm-hmm. Terrell Bernard, first game back last week. Von Miller still has 3 more games he's going to miss. Mm-hmm. And then who else am I missing here? Ed Oliver.
Yep.
Hamstring injury. You're probably looking at for sure out this week. The fact that he was already ruled out, I would say, with the Titans coming up the next week, I don't know that the Bills should feel overly obligated to rush him back. And the fact that the Bills haven't put him on IR tells me that they expect him to be back in a couple weeks. So I think maybe you're looking at more so that Seattle game is when you might see Ed Oliver back. So the defense is going to get stronger, but there's also probably going to be more injuries along the way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as the Bills currently sit, it's hard for me to imagine without them adding a receiver to this room, barring just significant growth throughout the season from Keon Coleman, or maybe the light coming on for Curtis Samuel, or in my opinion, maybe the toe injury from training camp kind of alleviating a little bit. It's hard to imagine this team really putting it together. But let's talk about this matchup specifically. What's your confidence level going into this game on Monday night?
Pretty confident. I understand Josh Allen traditionally struggles against the Jets and the Jets defense. I understand that they are in probably some of the worst form they've been in Josh Allen era in general at this moment in time. All of that said, I do believe in the new coach bump. I think there's something that does that. It makes everyone pucker up a little bit more in there and understand that, you know, things are changing. There's obviously eyes on things being not good enough, and mm-hmm. ownership and everyone is willing to do something about it now. So job security becomes kind of something called into question. So naturally that elevates your game a little bit from a player perspective. And then also coaching kind of probably, you know, puts things on lockdown a little bit more. With that said, I think one, the New York media market is a different animal. And I think this week's been a big week for them when it comes to kind of handling the fire of everything. But then two, I think the other part of it is I can't remember where I was watching it, but they talked about how this feels different because it's a dynamic unlike anyone else when you hear about a coach firing. And what they're talking about is now Rodgers comes out and says that he had no influence in it, and he was even shocked by it, and so on and so forth. But overall, from the outside perspective, of course, people are believing that he's driving some of these decisions. And there's that, there's always been this discussion about, is there a rift in the dressing room, in the locker room, in the meetings, everywhere between Rodgers and then coaching and leadership elsewhere. So with that in mind, all of a sudden this move happens. You truly have this weird polarizing effect right now occurring where new coach, you see the offensive coordinator that, you know, Rodgers prefers, he gets demoted and play calling shifts. You know, there's a lot of other things going on right now where it's calling in stuff into question. And there's just too much unknown going on where it can be understandable that their focus might not be entirely there because no one just truly knows what to expect and what's going on at this moment in time. So now that said, moving forward here, I think the Bills, I'm confident that they're understanding their level of performance has been far under the needed standard. And at least what they have is the polar opposite of what the Jets have currently. They have stability at the coaching ranks. They have stability of leadership when it comes to Josh Allen in general. So I would imagine that this week, one, they always have elevated divisional games as a little bit more important than your average other game. But then two, with everything going on right now, the message you've kind of heard coming out of meetings and whatnot has been that it just needs to get better. It needs to be better. And I would imagine that if they're saying that, there's been a bigger focus on just tightening things up, getting to where they can be successful. And you and I have talked in other programs, like when we were on Cover One earlier this week, where maybe hopefully they are recognizing things that they need to do to be better successful, let's say offensively, like moving Keon Coleman around, or instead of just having him ISO and the X or whatever, wherever they want to line him up, because it's just not good enough to put him in a spot to succeed at the moment in time. Things like that. I believe that the Bills, with the negative things going on, have a much better organizational situation to right the ship right now than where the Jets currently are. I think the noise is real in the Jets locker room and the Jets office and everything above. So the pressure in my eyes is way more on that New Jersey side than it is on the Bills side. And with that in mind, I think that can make, that can elevate any little issue that might come up during the game. And what we've seen from the Jets so far, to be quite frank, they're kind of fugazi-ish. Like it's hard to believe that Rodgers is going to be able to do anything with this offense like he has been able to do in his career. He's clearly not what he was. Naturally, he is in his 40s and he's coming off a Achilles. It's not exactly something that should be surprising, but there's that. Breece Hall can't get going, and there's something clearly going on with that. There's just a lot of stuff going on that's just not working well. And similar to how we talked about it with the Bills, the same questions and kind of unknowns exist for the Jets, where I really don't know how they turn things around. And I trust the Bills coaching more so than I trust whatever you want to call the coaching that is currently for the Jets. So confidence is good. Long winded answer there, Josh, for you. But overall, confidence is pretty good going into Monday night.
So I want to talk about the new coach bump real quick. I am not as concerned in this spot, even though I do respect the data that shows that the new coach bump is real, because I think when you're talking about a new coach bump, what you're generally talking about is an underperforming / bad team in December that's already lost enough games to where firing your coach is warranted. And that's when you see guys, Ross Tucker was on WGR this week and talked about it. That's when guys are worried about job security. Like, oh man, they got rid of the coach. Like, they're going to clean house this offseason. We got to give them a reason to keep me. And that's where you see like Jeff Saturday, totally unqualified, takes over the Colts job, dusts off Matt Ryan, who'd been benched, goes to Las Vegas and wins a game, and then proceeds to lose basically the rest of them. But in this situation, it's October. You don't have teams that are playing out the string right now. You don't have teams that are just piling up losses because they're trying to run out the season. These teams are all still in competitive mode. So I don't necessarily worry about that too much. I do think it's interesting that what we're seeing with Rodgers, because he's developed a bit of a turnover problem. He had 3 interceptions last week. And my one first key to the game, and this is going to be an ultimately like key to the game. Don't lose the turnover battle.
Wow.
Last year in New York, Rodgers goes down on the first drive of the game, and we're all thinking the same thing. This is a gimme.
Wow.
Bills go into halftime up 13-3, and Zach Wilson can't complete a pass, and you're thinking, this game is a wrap. And Josh Allen proceeds to throw three interceptions, and the Bills lose in overtime. What the Bills cannot survive with tomorrow is chaotic Josh Allen. And despite the fact that he has not thrown an interception this year, I think we saw glimpses of chaotic Josh Allen in Houston last week. Poor decision-making. There was a play at the end of the first half where he absolutely should have been intercepted by the Texans linebacker. Terrible decision. Ball was just dropped. He rushed some reads last week. So I want to see Josh Allen play calm. I'd never, ever want to see him put the cape away. I think right now, especially with some of the issues the Bills are having with receiver help, you're going to need Josh Allen's cape on several times this game. But the Bills cannot afford to give up short fields, because to Luca's point, this Jets offense, and we're all looking at these names like Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall. If you follow the draft, you know the name Braylon Allen. And if you play fantasy football, you know the name Braylon Allen. Alan Lazard and Mike Williams are respectable NFL players. And you're thinking, well, how bad can this offense be? It's bad, bad. There's no explosion to it. Rodgers has almost no downfield presence with his arm right now. And Wilson and Rodgers are not on the same page. And beyond that, it's you think, oh, well, they got Breece Hall and Braylon Allen. They can just run it down their throat. No, Breece Hall has been a shell of himself the last few weeks, to the point where he's losing carries to Braylon Allen. I have Breece Hall in fantasy, by the way. So along those lines, a punt is not a bad thing in this game for the Bills. I am generally Mr. Aggressive. I'm not going to be the one that's pounding the table when it's 4th and 2 at the 50-yard line for the Bills to go for it in this game. I do think this is the kind of game where field position will matter. I don't want to give the Jets short fields. I'm totally okay with playing ping pong with these guys, making Aaron Rodgers prove he can go 80 yards against this Bills defense that's been opportunistic, and see what they have. On the other side, though, I do wonder, Luca, is there a particular way you like for the Bills to attack this Jets defense? I do think the shine is a little off of Sauce Gardner this year. And I don't mean to say like he's not still a top of the league cornerback. I think he's still one of the best young cornerbacks in the league. For my money, it's Patrick Surtain is way ahead of him, but he's way ahead of pretty much everybody else in my eyes right now. I still think Sauce is one of the better young corners. If you believe in PFF grades, they have Sauce rated as an average corner. If you've watched the Jets, who have been on a lot of primetime games, you've noticed a lot of penalties against Sauce. I'm not saying you're going to go out there and attack Sauce. I certainly wouldn't recommend that. And I do think that the Jets, who play the 9th most man coverage in the sport, are going to copy the game plan we've seen from the Texans and the Ravens the last few weeks. Single high. We're going to clog up the middle of the field. We're going to force your guys to beat us on the outside. Is there something within the Bills or within the Jets defense where you like the Bills' ability to attack?
It's a great question, because in historical terms, the answer would be kind of no. Like, I wouldn't really have one thing I would isolate. What I will say is, I forecast something in this matchup based on what we've seen with the Jets, where it feels like they should absolutely be able to dominate the line of scrimmage, in my opinion. And if you can dominate the line of scrimmage, you can get back to a kind of a recipe of success that they had week 2 in Miami, where the run game was just working so well that realistically you didn't have to do too much. But also that run game being so successful allowed you to utilize things like the play action from under center, things like that, that are really, it's kind of a dying thing in the league overall, play action under center. Like, that just doesn't happen anymore. But you can do those things while then also putting in your from the gun kind of flair if you want to go back to those things as well that we saw with a little bit more exotic pre-snap motion and whatnot. But I think ultimately, if you can dominate in the trenches and get that run game, you can you can control the tempo of the game overall. And I think if you can do that against the Jets, you put their offense in a bind that they just don't have an answer for. They quite simply do not. And it's weird because I do believe that the Jets kind of, they have the pieces to be successful on offense. Like you mentioned, all the names, Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, Braylon Allen's a great kind of complement in the backfield that's working out a little bit better than Breece Hall at the moment. And then even like Joe Tippmann at center has been very good for them. Vera Tucker has been nice at right guard. Like the offensive line's been decent enough as well. Just, it seems to just not want to operate all as a unit together smoothly. You know, the moments of success that they have are very brief and they're flash-like. So if you can control the tempo of the game offensively from your own right, just kind of maintain everything as you need it to, just dominate the run game from there. Realistically, I just see it where you can essentially put the Jets in a bind for their offense to feed into the strength of what you currently have on defense, that being your perimeter secondary to basically bottle up Wilson, in my opinion. And then from there, just kind of dare them to be patient, because I think that's the other thing the Jets don't like to do right now. When you have Rodgers, it's like, you don't want to be patient. Well, look, Rodgers can't do what he used to do when he's winning back-to-back MVPs. And all of a sudden, if you get impatient, it's putting him at, like we saw last week in London, Rodgers make some very unlike Rodgers-like throws where he was flat out overthrowing receivers. It was bad. It was genuinely bad. And I think that was just from them thinking they needed to force the issue here and move the ball a little bit more aggressively. And it just kind of it fed itself right into the defense for the Vikings. So I that's the recipe of success in my eyes, is dominate the line of scrimmage, run the ball efficiently, which sucks because Cook is coming off of this injury, which it sounds like Cook's going to play, but obviously he's not at 100%. So, you know, you're going to have to do it by committee. And all due respect to Ty Johnson and Ray Davis, I'm not confident that they'd be able to, be effective on a regular occurrence in the run game, because there's just nothing showing. They haven't been able to show us anything yet that makes that feel like I should be okay with it. You know, you need James Cook to be there, to be that dynamic threat from the backfield to make it work. And I don't quite see, if he's not at 100%, how that truly can happen. But that does feel like the way to be successful, because if they're going to be out there, you know, asking regular minutes from Will McDonald the fourth, you know, to play the, like, have him run defend. That's all I'll say there. Like, Will McDonald is not a run defending edge. And then Clemens on the opposite right now. Also, like, he's okay, but he's been a little bit rough around the edges this year. And you can dominate those guys physically, that I believe the Bills should be able to control the entire 60 minutes tempo and stuff. And that would be how you succeed, especially considering everything we talked about with receiving weapon concerns and all that. It's like, why have the concerns with your receiving weapons when you can just do something else anyways?
Yeah, I think it is going to come down to the running game. I'm not as concerned about the Cook injury as long as the Bills, if they notice that he's lost a step early in the game, they do pivot and go to Ray Davis and Ty Johnson. I do think that the run scheme should be just fine. Those guys aren't James Cook, but I don't think the drop-off will be too bad. But it's going to be an interesting battle for Joe Brady, because we highlighted last week, Joe Brady became very predictable, where he was running the ball on like 80% of drive starts. And what the Bills have to find the right balance in against this Jets team is running the ball, forcing them to respect the run, but mixing up the situations. Go under center on first down, but play action pass out of run personnel. Put two tight ends on the field and two receivers. And even if they're your big run blocking receivers like Mac Hollins and Keon Coleman, and then you have Kincaid and Knox on the field, throw out of that. Put them in a bind out of play action, under center play action. They have to find a way to keep the Jets off their toes. I also think that I want to see Josh Allen use his legs more. We saw a little bit of that last week against Houston. You know, some of it by necessity, had 54 yards rushing. And that was good to see, because of the fact that it seemed like he had kind of slowed down with his running after he had the hand injury. But this is a game that I think you can really take advantage of his wheels, particularly if Khalil Shakir is not 100% or is not active. We should know by 4 p.m. on Monday if Khalil Shakir is going to be active, because the Bills have to announce their practice squad call-ups. And if they don't bring up a wide receiver, you would assume Khalil Shakir is good to go. Curtis Samuel has already said he's good to go. What do you think about the tight ends in this matchup, Luke? I feel like that this is becoming a theme every week where it's like, is this the Kincaid game? Is this the Kincaid game? And, you know, I think there was a certain segment of fans, maybe me included, last week that it was like the first, what's the word I have here? The first red flag with Kincaid. You know, like when you're in a new relationship and you're like in that honeymoon period, that's kind of like it is when you draft a player. I mean, on draft day, it's all great. All you're watching is their highlight package. You're looking for any draft expert that will tell you what their upside can be. Like, oh, Dalton Kincaid has the upside to be the next Travis Kelce. Like, yeah, tell me more about that. I don't want to hear about how his downside is. He might be the next Tim Ewis. Google that one. So we all fall in love with these players. And then generally speaking, the honeymoon period lasts through the rookie year, barring catastrophe. Like, you can always make excuses why the rookie year doesn't blow up. And Kincaid had some flashes in the playoffs. He had some flashes. And we all came into this year thinking, oh man, he's going to eat. And it's not like he's been bad this year, but when you look around the league and you see what other tight ends are doing, and then you realize, like, the Bills trade up in the first round for this guy. And is this a thing where they don't really have a good plan for him? Or is it a situation where he's just not as dynamic as they thought? And now you see him, who a guy who never dropped the ball in college, dropping a couple passes last week. Well, you know, we'll give him a little bit of a pass for the one on the sideline. That was a tough call against him, but it did go against him. It did kill a drive. But I think this is the kind of game where you need to see Kincaid work because of multiple reasons. One, we already talked about Sauce. DJ Reed on the other side is excellent. Michael Carter, their slot cornerback, is out. Mm-hmm. And that is a big deal. You can attack these Jets in the slot. If Khalil Shakir plays, I think this would be a big Khalil Shakir game. If Khalil Shakir doesn't play, I might sit here and think this could be a big Curtis Samuel game, but holy cow, Luca, how can I say that with a straight face at this point in time? We don't get the impression that they have any interest in moving Keon Coleman to the slot, even though you and I talked about it last week. That's something they could do. You don't have to take our word for it. Steve Smith complained about it this week, which was incredible because it was like kind of validated our opinion on that. But that just leaves the 12 personnel. And I do think that when you're talking about run game, you're talking about play action, I do think there's a chance to get some big gainers to Kincaid. Also Dawson Knox. And I do think that's maybe where that the Bills can kind of beat this Jets team up a little bit. Their coverage linebackers are good, though. This isn't a situation where it's like Jacksonville, where there's an obvious weakness in the middle of the field. There's not a lot of holes on this defense. But, you know, we do have Josh Allen. I think the tight ends have a chance, Luca. I think if Shakir plays, he has a chance. And from that point, I do think that the Bills are very interesting in that regard. What do you think about the Bills' offensive line this season? Because I think they've gotten a lot of credit. Chris Sims, a guy we both respect, said that outside of Josh Allen, the only blue chip thing on the Bills' offense is their offensive line. I think you and I are probably not quite as high as the majority on their offensive line. And you've noticed that you seem to have some concerns specifically on the right side.
Yeah. With the offensive line, first and foremost, to kind of do a positive, McGovern's been great at center, yes, which is a little bit surprising, to be honest, because it didn't seem like it was too smooth in the limited reps and snaps we saw in the preseason. And it was kind of like we're going to see how this goes, but I'm not exactly comfortable about it. It feels like it's going well. Deion Dawkins is still Deion Dawkins. You know, he's still, I believe, everything he's been, and he's fine. Edwards is kind of a roller coaster a little bit at times, but when you're in between McGovern and Dawkins, I feel like you can kind of you just need to be there. You just like try not to hold and just be there, and you'll be okay. The problem and the concerns is it's on the right side. Torrence and Brown have been very below what we need them to be and kind of what's expected. Brown has kind of been the more disappointing one, and I only say that because Torrence is technically still only a sophomore in the NFL. He's, you know, he was obviously a full rookie starter and did a good job last season, I feel like, overall. And I think we're seeing a little bit, you know, I don't want to call it a regression. I'm going to call it a sophomore slump. I think that's kind of what we're experiencing with Torrence. And the only reason we're experiencing that, though, is Spencer Brown's play has gone down. Spencer Brown is not what we saw these past couple of years. He is well below the standard that we expect from him, and what we kind of would see from him. I felt like last week, I want to say we had a bunch of holding calls from Spencer Brown and that right side in general. And it's been a couple weeks now. I want to say there were even some that reared their ugly head in Baltimore as well. He is just not helping Torrence like he did last season. And because of that, it's making that entire right side a big problem. And what I can kind of visualize and recall is we would see Allen roll out a lot in that Houston game, and that right side was getting blown up. And that's essentially why, you know, something was happening there. Now, Houston has very good edges. So overall, it's not like you're not going to be seeing Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter this week again. Like, you will be seeing, we mentioned it already, blanking on it, Clemens, McDonald the fourth, so on. Like, they're not quite your Will Andersons and Danielle Hunters. They're still respectable pass rushers. But with it, Spencer Brown needs to tighten it up. He needs to go back to what we saw these past couple seasons. If he doesn't do that, Torrence will probably continue in this sophomore slump that he's having right now, because he does depend on his outside tackle assisting him. We call him phone. He's a phone booth guard for a reason. He just lives in his space. If you are letting people get outside of him with such ease, it's just not going to help him out whatsoever. I think the biggest thing you can do, though, to help them is we wouldn't see these issues when they were being effective in the run game, going back to that earlier point. If they are being effective in that sense, it's at least buying them that split second off the snap in the pass game to not have the just crazy edge presence that's going on. When the Bills are just not able to effectively run the ball, they don't have an answer for what they need to do currently in the pass game. And then on top of it, Spencer Brown and Torrence are just getting shredded on that outside right now, that maybe you need to go to just more standard 12 personnel come Monday night. Maybe that's what you have to do. You need to just kind of make sure you have the bigger bodies on the line more so, you know, whether you're stacking it on the right or you spread it out evenly, like whatever you have to do to accommodate that, that's fine. If we saw Dawson Knox more out on the field, he can still be a pass catcher, but overall, to still assist that right side, let's call it, and just be more effective, and that's how we elevate it, I honestly have no problem with that, because it's getting someone else on the field that we haven't been currently seeing these past couple of weeks when things haven't been going well. If that's what you need to do to achieve it, so be it. I have no problem with that whatsoever. And then that just opens up the possibilities of something else occurring that might be able to help this offense kind of get back on the rails, get back on track, and move forward effectively so that we can get back on the winning ways instead of just watching these awful, awful losses that we've experienced recently.
On the other side of it, I want to see Greg Russo. He had the big 3-sack performance against the Cardinals. And, you know, the box score hasn't been too friendly since then. No sacks since then. I know he's gotten some pressures. He's been strong against the run. But, you know, I know whenever I criticized Greg Russo last week, I put out a tweet and I even said it on the podcast. Is he the Gabe Davis of defensive ends, where he gets his stats in bunches, three or four games a year where he has really big games. And, you know, at the end of the year, you're like, oh, the stats are nice. And folks are like, well, you know, he had a pressure here. And I get all that. I'm not trying to devalue what he does. But you're talking about a guy who the Bills picked in the first round, who has elite measurables. And he's a guy that's going to need a contract extension this offseason. And you're talking about paying him an ungodly amount of money. And I'm just begging you. Turn on a Steelers game, turn on a Browns game. Prior to today, turn on a Lions game. Do you ever go 4 weeks without seeing an impact play from TJ Watt, Miles Garrett, or Aiden Hutchinson? It doesn't happen. Brian Burns on the Giants makes splash plays every time you watch them. I'm not trying to devalue Greg Rousseau, but they have a huge financial decision to make with him. And this is the kind of game where you need him to really come through. There's no Ed Oliver. There's no Von Miller. There's no secret about who the dude is. I was very impressed with what I saw from Carter last week. I think AJ Epenesa really needs to step his game up as well. And outside of that, I think Smoot has been a positive for this team. And Daquan Jones is unfortunately just not playing at the same level we saw last year prior to the injury, where people were thinking he was having a Pro Bowl level season. So Greg Rousseau to me is the guy that really needs to put pressure on Rodgers. And in the past, Rodgers released the ball so quickly, it wouldn't matter. You're seeing everything about Rodgers is just a tick slower this year. He doesn't have the foot speed. And he does get a little antsy in the pocket. The Jets should get a boost this week. Morgan Moses looks like he's coming back. That'll get their rookie tackle, Fashanu, off the field. He's been really bad. He was the target of the controversy between Saleh and Rodgers, where it was about, like, do we need to switch up the cadence and all that fun stuff, if you know that. But, you know, Morgan Moses is not like a special player. Tyron Smith is not a special player at this point in his career, but that'll help settle it down. I need to see a Greg Rousseau impact player too in this game. It doesn't have to be a sack, but it needs to be a situation where you're watching a game and it's like Greg Rousseau is the reason why the Bills won that play. And I need to see it multiple times in this game. Otherwise, I do start to worry about this defense holding up without Ed Oliver and Von Miller. All right, Luca, let's get into predictions on this game, because I also want to save some time on the back end to talk about this wide receiver trade conversation idea, where it stands now, and maybe the result of this game, the impact it could have on that. Okay, so Bills, Jets. The Jets are 2-3. The Bills are 3-2. The winner takes hold of the AFC East. We talked about the chaos with the Jets. We talked about what the Bills have been going through with injuries, the two-game skid. Luca, who wins this game on Monday Night Football? What's the final score? And give me your why for why you predict it.
So first and foremost, the Bills win this game. Score-wise, it's a tough one. I honestly see it where it's kind of going to be an ugly 23-16 game, something in that ballpark where it's not pretty, but it gets the job done kind of deal. But the confident thing is the Bills are going to be winning this game. The reason why is, though, we talked about the offensive line. I talked about how it does feel like a mismatch a little bit, where the Bills should be able to control the trenches, at least offensively. And if they are what we've seen in their successful time this season is when they're able to establish and rely on the run game and keep going at it, whether it's James Cook, Ty Johnson, Ray Davis, like if they're able to just keep doing this offensively, everything else kind of lines up, where looking back on it, I don't even, other than the Jags game feels like an outlier. If you look at the Cardinals game, where it was kind of just like a quarter and a half where the pass game was working well, but outside of that, it kind of wasn't. And then the Dolphins game, we didn't really need to see it work because it just, the game got out of hand so quick. It's something where maybe we were just disguising it so well that realistically the reason it was just not needed was because of how effective that run game is. I like your note as well, where if Josh Allen can use his legs a little bit more, that'd be great. I do think that is his finger situation, his hand situation kind of is playing into it. You know, it seems a little silly overall. It's like just protect it a little bit better when you are running, but I get just don't put it in harm's way altogether. But going back to it, the reason we win is I don't see McDonald the fourth. I don't see Clemens. I don't see like Williams has even been having a bit of a down season for the Jets on the interior of their defensive line. He's still a great player, but they've been pretty average at best on that defensive line. And they're a little bit undersized as well on the edge. If you can control that line of scrimmage entirely, I don't see how the Jets can't play a chasing game. The offense just isn't working right now where they can chase the game. So if you can control it from the trenches, which they should be able to, overall, you should be able to maintain your lead throughout the entirety of 60 minutes. And for that reason, that's why I have the Bills winning. And with the score, I'll commit to it. 23-16.
23-16. was that the score? No, it was 22-16 last year. They didn't have to get the extra point in overtime after the punt return. I've been going back and forth on this. There's a lot that concerns me about this game. We mentioned the new coach bump. I respect it. I did talk earlier about why I'm not overly paranoid about it in this instance, with I think it being a little bit different scenario than most new coach bumps. I am concerned about the personnel on the Jets defense, even down Michael Carter, their ability to play this single high, take everything in the inside away. I mean, I think they can do it as well, if not better, than the last two teams the Bills have faced. The Jets personnel on defense is fantastic. And there is an aspect of not just the new coach bump, but, you know, the game planning aspect for the Bills. What do you prepare for with a Todd Downing offense and a no longer Robert Saleh defense? Although I do think it'll mainly be the same principles. And then there's the desperation factor. You know, the Jets fired their coach this week. I do think that not just the new coach bump, but like they're seeing their season spiral a little bit. And, you know, I think there's a chance the Bills get their best shot on Monday night. But the one thing I keep coming back to in this game is, while I can't come up with a specific matchup, particularly on offense, that I'm like, that's going to be the reason why the Bills win, I really can't do the other thing on the Jets offense either. I think there's going to be the story on Tuesday when we're analyzing this game that one of these defenses is why that team won. And it's either going to be the Bills defense suffocated the Jets defense suffocated the Bills, or both defenses suffocated each other and one team just made one more play. So let's make it the Bills defense doing that, and let's have complimentary football and Josh Allen, you know, protecting the ball, but also putting on the cape at times, using his legs a little bit more. Run to set up the pass, play action, but don't be predictable with it. Yada, yada, yada. We've talked about it. But the biggest point, while I don't have X's and O's that I love for the Bills, particularly on offense, I'm going to lean on the foundation of the Bills. I'm going to lean on everything that Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean and Josh Allen have built with this team since really 2019, when they've made the playoffs every single year, and since 2020, when they've won this division every single year. This is a team that has been through tough times, some of the toughest times in the history of the sport, if you want to talk about the DeMar Hamlin situation. They've had to move games at the last minute and win games. This is a team that's not uncomfortable in uncomfortable situations. And this is going to be an uncomfortable situation. I'm leaning on the fact that you have one team in the Jets that I think are spiraling out of control. Now, could this be a galvanizing moment for them? Sure. But I would have more faith in a team like the Chiefs, the Ravens, a team that's the 49ers, where the nucleus of those guys and the coaches have been together to pull together and like galvanize. This Jets team, it's new head coach, new offensive coordinator, quarterback that's been there for 5 minutes, that airs out all their dirty laundry on the biggest sports talk show every single Tuesday. And you have their best defensive back, at least reputation-wise, Sauce Gardner, saying he's taking away his social media because he's so upset about the Saleh firing. Like, I'm not getting galvanizing vibes. I just need the Bills to go in there and be the grown-ups. Like, don't let the Jets' chaos become your chaos. Your goal here is to win a football game. If the Jets are distracted by all the outside noise, great. Go win a football game. And I believe in the program the Bills have built. I believe in the program Sean McDermott has built. And despite the fact that the Bills are 0-2 in this building against this team that started Zach Wilson once and had Zach Wilson come in on the second pass play of the game another time, I think the Bills go to the Meadowlands, go to the Meadowlands, get a win. I'm not overly comfortable with a score prediction, because while I don't think the Bills are just going to pile up points on this team, I can absolutely see this game spiraling out of control for one of these teams if they fall behind and they start making mistakes. So I could see a world where the Bills win this game like 38-9, and it's, you know, a lot of turnovers and weirdness and stuff like that. That's not what I'm going to predict, though. I'm going to say it's a solid day for the offense, a very strong day for the defense. Give me the Bills by a score of, we'll go 20-10. Like, just, it's one of those games where the Bills are comfortable all the way to the end, and it's just a professional win, and they get it done. And, you know, and we'll let the Jets figure out what that looks like for them. And potentially, Luca, if the Bills knock the Jets to 2-4 and a distant second place in the AFC East, would that make the Jets a less attractive landing spot for, oh, I don't know, Davante Adams? Luca, as we sit here recording this on October 13th, for an episode dropping on October 14th, what is your confidence level that the Bills are going to make a move at wide receiver before the season ends? No, before the trade deadline, not before.
Yeah, I was going to say before the season. Well, you're opening up some weird avenues there.
Yeah. Make a trade for a wide receiver. I don't mean signing Kadarius Toney off of a practice squad.
Out of 10, I'd give it a 4. We talked about it in a previous episode, I do believe, how Bean does have a track record of making moves at the deadline. There is notable history of that being something, and it's something where he recognizes a need for whatever it is and will attack that by the trade deadline. Most notably the last season one where he acquired Rasul Douglas because that was needed. And of course that really did. It covered a lot of holes on the defensive side that was able to kind of let them get to where they got to by the end of the season. So I believe Bean does that. Where I'm hesitant though is, you're hearing the reports about the Davante Adams situation where now all of a sudden Schefter just dropped a good old bomb of, he could still just be a Raider at this point. Like, you know, he might be just going back to be a Raider because no one's even coming close to meeting the demands of the Raiders. And what I'm imagining happening is the Raiders are just quite simply they're not at the point right now where they're willing to accept that they're going to have to retain money. I think that truly is what it is. You know, no one's going to really make that move unless they can, because the teams that are going to want to trade for Davante Adams basically can't afford him at his entire contract value, or don't want to. And for the Raiders to get the asking price they want, they have to be retaining salary. And they're just, I mean, Mark Davis is just being stubborn, I would imagine. Then you go off to like an Amari Cooper, a Deontay Johnson, someone I know you've highlighted over, a DeAndre Hopkins, if that's something that tickles your fancy. I just think it's where you have to have the other side being willing. And ultimately I don't know where that all stands. I don't know at all what the hell's happening in Cleveland and who has the say on what goes on. Obviously the ownership has say who starts quarterback week in, week out, because if it was Stefanski, I'm pretty confident that Watson would no longer be under center. But with that in mind, if the owner believes that Deshaun Watson should still be starting, why do I believe that he would except that the season's lost and then start moving an asset like an Amari Cooper? I don't know. It seems like something that doesn't quite connect, even though it makes a lot of sense. Deontay Johnson, just the classic. I mean, the Panthers are kind of the Panthers. So are they going to be willing to move? So I think it's more so of Bean's going to do his due diligence. And I do believe that he's calling around. I believe in all the reports that he has kind of continued to monitor the Davante Adams situation. I imagine it's not like he's only calling the Raiders and monitoring that one singular situation. If they're monitoring one, I'm sure they're looking around. But how willing is the other party to send someone there? That's where I have a little bit of questions, because if you're talking to your Davante Adams, who's run by Mark Davis, if you're talking to your Amari Cooper, who's run by Cleveland and that disaster of an organization right now, how willing are these owners and are these GMs to kind of move off these assets? Because of what we're seeing right now does not suggest that they think of things logically, at least is the way to put it. So that's where the confidence is dropped down to, say, a 4. Like a 3-4. I don't believe it's a Bills thing. I think it's an outside of the Bills control kind of thing that puts it down a little bit.
I think I'm a little more confident than you. I thought Mike Florio had a great point on the Raiders eating money. His point was, every week that goes by that they don't trade Davante Adams, they're paying an additional essentially 900 grand to Davante Adams. They're piling up. And if they don't trade him at the trade deadline, that is essentially taking on all of the money that they don't want to eat via trade. So if it comes down to it on November 5th, when the trade deadline is, if the Bills are the only team on the other end of the phone saying, we'll give you a 2. And they're like, well, we don't want to eat money. It's like, well, if you don't take our offer, you're going to eat it anyway, and you're not going to have this two in your pocket. Right now, they're paying Davante Adams to watch games because he has a hamstring injury. I believe there's probably some legitimacy to that hamstring injury, but based on reporting, I would say it's not something I'd be overly concerned about if I was a team trading for him. It seems like that's something that could heal up pretty quickly once he gets traded. There's other names out there. Jalin Hyatt is a name that I was high on in the draft process. He has one catch for the Giants this entire season. When Malik Nabers comes back, he's a guy that's just getting lost in the shuffle behind Nabers, behind Slayton, behind Wandell Robinson. I know Brian Daboll's had to go out and, you know, kind of reaffirm that he likes Jalin Hyatt. That doesn't necessarily solve your separator issue. Maybe it upgrades the MVS, like take the top off the defense spot. Like the Bills can use help at a lot of places. And I know the pushback for the Bills making a trade is, why would they spend all offseason getting into a everybody eats mindset, building this core, and then changing midway? My answer to that is, one, you should never stick to your original plan just because it was your original plan. If now that we see that it's not working, let's change it. But the other thing I will say, all due respect to Keon Coleman, who was the 33rd pick in the draft, the Bills' biggest swing at wide receiver this offseason was Curtis Samuel, where they spent $24 million on him, $16 million guaranteed, and he's been almost an absolute zero for them this season. If there is real concern in this building that they're going to continue to get nothing out of Curtis Samuel, that is a change from where they stood in August, where they were counting on Curtis Samuel. You have to assume they were counting on Curtis Samuel for a sizable role based on the money, based on his history with Joe Brady. And if Mac Hollins getting all of these snaps was plan A, then why did you ever invest this money in Curtis Samuel? I think it's a byproduct of Curtis Samuel not giving them what they thought he would get. And I also think Brandon Bean is the kind of guy where if he knows he can flip a pick now, but also not mess up his cap in the future, he's going to do it. That's where Davante Adams, Amari Cooper, if he's available, makes sense. But if you just want to add a guy to the mix, Jalin Hyatt, or even the Bills go out and they re-sign Chase Claypool, who they released with an injury settlement. They are allowed to sign him back now since they did that. Things like that I could see to shake up the group. Something's going to happen, I think. The only way I don't see it happening is if Khalil Shakir comes back either this week or the week following and everything looks just like the same way it did the first 3 weeks, where it's like, holy cow, he is the missing link. It's all about Khalil Shakir. That would surprise me. I'm a big Khalil Shakir guy, but I think Khalil Shakir, in my opinion, no disrespect, is much more suited to be a Robin than a Batman. I think he is a guy who on his best day can be a really strong Robin, but this group still lacks a Batman, and it doesn't look like it's going to be Dalton Kincaid right now. Keon Coleman, as I've said time and time again, is a pup, and you don't want to just punt a year of Josh Allen. And I expect the Bills to be monitoring multiple situations. Well, Luca, we've previewed the game. We've given our picks. Any final thoughts here? Anything you saw around the league that was noteworthy Bills-wise? I can't really think of much. Aiden Hutchinson won't be playing when the Bills play the Lions. That's unfortunate for him. But he should be fully recovered by 2025. Anything that sticks out to you?
Drake May, I think, overall had a good start to his career. I think he looked good and he provided something to the Patriots that I'm sure fans at least were dying for, also known as the ability to throw the ball downfield. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely noteworthy from a Bills perspective. I will say, you started off the episode saying it so perfectly well. This was a weird day where there really wasn't anything all Sunday that affected if you're a Bills fan, that affected your fandom. I mean, the Bengals just sealed it up with a 17-7 win over the Giants, but really they struggled for a vast majority of that game to move the ball. I mean, their only touchdowns came from a Joe Burrow 47-yard scramble. That was a complete wide open break of the coverage in the opening drive. And then Chase Brown ran in one when, quite honestly, he should have gone down to seal the game. And it technically breathed a little bit of life into the Giants there, where they did attempt a field goal to bring it back to one score of 50 seconds left and failed. So outside of that, I would just say what I learned while watching football today is things are going bad for the Bills. And yet, I'll be quite frank here. I mean, when you watch the Bengals still struggle against a team like the Giants, who honestly they shouldn't be, you watch the likes of like the Broncos, who have been pretty good, absolutely lay an egg against the Chargers team at home. Joe Flacco is still doing it for the Colts, but it's not pretty against the Titans. Like the Texans won 41-21, but Drake May in his first start was able to move the ball. It was a struggle early. And I'll chalk that one up to, you know, first start jitters. But he settled in a little bit and he started to move the ball. Now, how aggressive were Houston being defensively? I'm not sure, but everyone has their own faults. And what I'm learning here is when the Bills get back on track, they're still with all of the best of the best. And the winners of this week were quite simply like the Chiefs, because they're still, you know, sitting there on their bye week undefeated and they're looking around. And if you're the Chiefs, the only enemy is yourself at the moment. And Baltimore looks like your only real threat right now, as they're humming on all cylinders, it feels like. But if the Bills were to get back and going, they would be right there with it, you would imagine. So, I mean, around the league wise, nothing really notable. And I'm just really excited for Monday night to hopefully see the Bills get back on track.
On Monday, I will be live at halftime talking about everything that happened in the first half, and hopefully it's a happy halftime show. The last two have not been. The last two have been pretty depressing, as both games were blowouts at halftime, although the Bills made a game of it against Houston. And then Luca and I will be back next Sunday night to break down Bills-Titans. Depending on what happens with Bills-Jets, I may throw up a post-game video on the YouTube channel. It won't be on Spotify or Apple, just on our YouTube channel at Bills Chat, especially if it's, you know, a depressing loss or, you know, an exhilarating victory. If it's just like a ho-hum Bills beat the Jets, but, you know, the Jets just stink or whatever, like, hey, I probably won't. But, you know, if there's, I'm off work on Tuesday. So, you know, we'll see what we can do. And then Lucas Sabres chat this week. I always forget this game.
No, we're every other week. So I put out the one last week. Sabres did get their first win, thank God, against the defending Stanley Cup champ, Florida Panthers. But a lot of work to do to right the ship. They don't play until Wednesday night on TNT while they're at Pittsburgh, I believe it is. Hopefully Lindy's got the boys still whipped under the crack or cracked under the whip. Because, I don't know how I screwed that one up. But it's a struggle out of the gates, we'll call it, Josh. And, we're every other week here. So can at least still just observe games, observe and report from there. Got another week. They're on the road for a good stretch here, because I noticed after going Saturday, I don't have another home game for 10 days here. Nothing this week on Sabres Chat, but it will be back out next Wednesday on YouTube.
Well, hopefully the Bills get a win on Monday, the Sabres get a win on Wednesday, and everybody's just feeling hunky-dory about their professional sports in Buffalo. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty, and we will talk to you next week on Bills Chat.